central roots of the conflict are actually local conflict over land and traditional power between various villages and various populations. And this escalated into massive violence in the early 90s, even before we started hearing about the Congo. And then you have two proximate causes of violence. The first one is the collapse of the state under the former president, President Mobutu, where basically the state the state collapsed. It almost disappeared. You didn't have any more state function. And the second proximate cause is the consequences of the Rwandan genocide in 1994, where you had about 1 million Rwandan refugees who poured into the Kivus, into the eastern Congo, and that that triggered a lot of violence.
So why was the two questions? So the first is, why was the state on the verge of collapse, and why would the sudden influx of refugees start, you know, ethnic violence?
Okay. Why was the state on the verge of collapse? The problem with President Mobutu is that he didn't depend on his population to get revenues. He depended on foreign aid from Western powers. So in the 80s, he started he stopped subventioning his bureaucracy. Basically, he didn't need the population. He didn't need to do anything for the provinces, for the provinces that that were not really rich. So he stopped subventioning his bureaucracy. And so without resources, the bureaucracy collapsed. And when you don't have administration, when you don't have money to pay the people, then just everything starts going down. And your second question was, why did the Rwandan refugees trigger so much violence? The problem is that when the Rwandan refugees arrived in the Congo, they arrived in a situation that was already extremely unstable because of the local conflict that I mentioned before, and also because the state, basically because you already didn't have much of a state presence. So when they arrived, they caused the constitution of ethnic militias. And these ethnic militias at the beginning were supposed to protect their villages against the Rwandan Hutus, who were the Rwandan Hutus militias, who were actually attacking the Congolese villages. And over time, the local village-level ethnic militias actually turned against their villages and started perpetrating violence, not only against other villages and against the Rwandan Hutu militias, but basically against their own population.
Why would they start attacking their own population?
That's a very good question. I'm still working on that, and I don't know if anybody has an answer. My guess is that sometimes they didn't attack their own population. Sometimes they would just go and attack other villages. But when they turned against their own populations, basically their families, their clan, my analysis is that it was rooted in the social dynamics. Those who enrolled in the local militias were usually, when you do an ethnography of these militias, they were usually people who are marginalized by the former traditional order. So they were the ethnic groups, all the families, all the clans that didn't have access to traditional and administrative power, and they were basically taking their revenge on the society that had marginalized them. You also had a lot of young people in these militias, and these young people didn't have access to to any social status or to power or to resources in the early 90s. So my analysis, and it's just one among others, is that they started taking revenge against their own population.
All right, so just to recap the past couple minutes, so you have a situation in Congo where you have a collapsing state and an influx of refugees, and then you have these ethnic militias that form, filled with a marginalized population and a young population, which eventually turns against its own community. So how does this all lead into the Second Congo War?
Well, it leads into the Second Congo War because For two reasons. The first one is that many neighboring countries started being very much dissatisfied with President Mobutu. And also because it was the end of the Cold War, President Mobutu lost many of his Western backers because France and the U.S. and Great Britain didn't need to have an ally at the center of Africa anymore for Cold War purposes. So that was the first thing, the dissatisfaction with President Mobutu. The second cause was that Rwanda actually was very unhappy with the fact that Rwandan Hutu militias, some of the responsible for the Rwandan for the genocide, for the 1994 genocide in Rwanda, some of them were still alive in the Kivu, and they were launching attacks against Rwandan territory. So Rwanda needed to chase this militia and to hand them down, and to make sure that it removed the threat on its territory. So there was the constitution of a broad international alliances with the Congo's neighbors that just needed to put another power in place in the Congo for various reasons.
And then this precipitated into what's now known as the Second Congo War. And what surprises me...
Sorry. It precipitated into the First Congo War.
The First Congo. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. It precipitated into the First Congo War.
Which, and what were the dates for the First Congo War?
The First Congo War, it was 1996, 1997, and I should know the exact dates, and I just don't remember off the top of my head. I know it ended in around the middle of 1997, and then it started again, the war started again in 1998 because of tensions between the new president, President Laurent Désiré Kabila, and his former backers, especially Rwanda and Uganda. And so basically Rwanda, Uganda, and various militias in the eastern Congo allied, and they formed a second rebellion, and that started the Second Congo War.
And so what surprises me the most about the Second Congo War in my brief research about this is that statistics have put up the number of casualties as being the worst incident of war since World War II, and yet it seems as if it's not well known, I guess, in the international mindset. But it was a very brutal war, and I guess can you take us through – I guess 1998 and to 2003, and what happened between those years?
Sure. How to summarize 5 years of war in 2 minutes?
You could take more than 2 minutes for this one.
Okay. So basically, you had this this alliance of various neighboring countries: Rwanda, Uganda, and South Sudan, I think, was on the alliance, in Burundi. And you had one main rebel group that was advancing and trying to take over the whole country. And the idea was to replicate exactly what had happened during the First Congo War. So to have a rebel movement that would go in a few months, that would go across the country and install a new power in a new government in Kinshasa. The problem for this plan is that other neighboring countries actually this time sided with the new president, with President Kabila, and they confronted the new rebel movement. So you had very quickly a country that was divided in two, between the rebel areas and then the governmental area. And then over time, the various rebel groups splintered many times. So you had three main rebel groups, and you had other smaller splinter groups, and you had various fragmented militias. And basically, between 1999 and 2003, the main conflict line was frozen. You had a ceasefire, and so the rebel group and the government didn't fight with one another on the ceasefire line. And most of the war was concentrated in the eastern Congo, in the areas that you still hear about today on the news, the two Kivus and Ituri, for example. And it was a guerrilla war that was going on behind the front line, where the government supported various militias, notably you've heard about the Mai Mai militias and the Rwandan Hutu militias. And then Rwandan and Uganda and Burundi supported the rebel groups. So so that's why you had so much violence in these provinces. It was really because it was a proxy war. While when you went during the war, when you went to the other provinces, they were much calmer and they were much more stable and much less insecure. And you had a peace process for a very long time. You had a peace process that started a few days after the beginning of the Second Congo War, but it was a very lengthy peace process for various international and national reasons, and it finally only ended into a real peace agreement in late 2002 and 2003, and that's how we had the beginning of what we call the transition from war to peace and democracy, where all the various warring parties, the main warring parties, decided that they would be part of a unified transitional government, and they would try to bring the country from war into peace and hopefully democracy.
And it was during this period, correct me if I'm wrong, that the Congo was Zaire was renamed to the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yes, I think Laurent Désiré Kabila renamed it the Democratic Republic of Congo. So it was during the war, and I would say it was in 1996, although I can check later on if you need.
All right. And so at the beginning of the show, we heard a little clip from Laurent Nakuda, who's now the general, who was a general in the Second Congo War and is now leading a rebel group in Eastern Congo. And so how did he come out of that Second Congo War into this new rebel offensive in Kivu?
Sure. Laurent Nakuda was actually an important general in the rebel army, the rebel that was controlling the eastern part of the Congo. And he was first known for supervising a really bad massacre in Kisangani, which is a town, one of the big towns in northeastern Congo. And in 2003, when you had the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, he was supposed to go to Kinshasa and to integrate into the National Army and receive a high-ranking position in the National Army. And there was a bit of a confusion between President Kabila and Laurent Nkunda and the various high military officers of the rebellion. And finally, he decided not to travel to Kinshasa and to take on his position. And he remained in the Kivus, in the eastern Congo, without having a formal status. For a couple of years, we didn't know if he was actually somehow part of the Congolese army or if he was actually a renegade commander. And then he started being extremely famous, and he emerged as the leader of the new rebellion. I would say it was in 2004 when they were fighting in the town of Bukavu, which is a major town in the eastern Congo, and people of Rwandan ancestry were saying that they were discriminated against and that there was so-called a genocide of people of Rwandan descent. And so Laurent Nkunda said that he was coming to help these people. So he came with his troops, took over Bukavu, that led to quite a lot of massacres and fighting, and he held the city for a week, I think, and then he was persuaded by international actors. He was persuaded to withdraw. But then at that point, he had already emerged as a central figure for all the people who are discontented with the transition, and especially for the ethnic minority of people with Rwandan ancestry. And since then, he basically retreated back into his province of North Kivu, and he started taking control over quite a lot of territory and installing a quasi-state on this territory. And he did that throughout the end of the transition, so until 2006 and the general elections. There was an attempt to integrate him back into the Congolese army, the unified Congolese army, in 2006, right after the elections. But it was mostly a failure. And then since 2006, basically, he's just been fighting with various local militias and governmental troops on and off. And it was not in the news, but you can really trace the history of violence. The fighting never stopped. And it just escalated in the past 3 months. But it's really much a continuation of what was going on since 2003.
So this brings us to late October, when on October 26, Kunda's forces marched towards Goma. During these conflicts, approximately 250,000 people were displaced. It is not clear why fighting has broken out again. General Nkunda has said that he wants to talk to his government regarding a $5 billion deal that gives China access to the region's mineral resources. Despite this announcement, it still remains unclear why this conflict has sprung up again, despite a ceasefire declared in January. In response to this, the UN has raised the amount of peacekeepers in the eastern regions of the Congo to approximately 17,000. The UN's mandate is to help pacify the country, keep control of an arms embargo, and secure the border. However, many Western nations, despite declaring the situation in the eastern Congo to be an atrocity, have not really sent their own troops to assist the UN. Also, forces on all sides of the conflict have accused the UN of being tourists and not doing anything to help pacify the conflict. Workers from aid organizations worry about civilians, as atrocities are being committed by all people involved. There have been stories about mass rape, mass killing, and children being forced to fight. Fighting means it's nearly impossible for aid to reach the area. The UN fears that many are dying from malnutrition. My conversation with Professor Altusser continued with her insight into why this conflict has begun again. We ended our discussion with the potential for the conflict to destabilize the region.
Nkunda has been fighting to take over more territory and to be acknowledged as a main rebel leader and to be acknowledged as someone with whom the Congolese government should negotiate. He's been fighting for that, I would say, for the past 5 years, and his latest offensive is just part of a pattern of trying to gain more territory and just to be acknowledged as a central rebel leader. Now on Goma, we've had fighting around Goma for about, I would say, a month now, but he tried to take Goma before. He tried to take Goma about a year ago, and I'm not sure what precipitated this specific instance of fighting this time. It was probably, he would say that it was that there was a ceasefire and then his enemies broke the ceasefire. But it's just that he's still trying to take control of more territory, and maybe now he's saying that he wants to put a new government in place in Kinshasa.
So now, I guess, zooming out a bit, Nkunda's rhetoric has been very strong in the past couple weeks, and there are worries that this fighting, if it escalates, might hurt stability in the region. So what do you imagine happening if offensives were to escalate in the region? How could stability be affected?
Well, the nightmare scenario is that Nkunda takes over Goma, for example, or continues to take over more territory, and then other neighboring countries go back into the Congo in support of President Kabila. You remember that, I don't know if I said that, but during the war, up to 14 foreign armies were present on Congolese territory, and I think they were coming from seven different countries. And so that was really what made the war escalate and transform the Congo war into a regional war. And now we are back about at the same stage than when we were at the beginning of the war in 1998. The war in 1998 started as a conflict, a localized conflict in the Kivu that escalated because various regional power took side sided with one party or another, sided with the government or sided with the rebels. And the nightmare scenario now is that Angola has been saying that it will send troops back to the Congo in support of President Kabila, if President Kabila asks for it. Zimbabwe is apparently considering maybe also sending troops back. On the other side, it has been acknowledged for a very long time that Rwanda supports Laurent Nkunda very much. And if Rwanda sees Angola, which was one of its main enemies during the Second Congo War, if Rwanda sees Angola coming back into the Congo and fighting very close to the Rwandan border, President Kagame has already said that it might consider it as an aggression. So it will be a pretext for Rwanda to send its troops back into the Congo. Then probably Uganda will get involved as well, and we're going to go back into the full-scale regional war that we had before.
I guess my last question is, if the nightmare situation occurs and there's a full-scale war that precipitates from that, do you think we would see a genocide that's kind of on the scale of, say, Sudan right now?
I don't know if you can use the word genocide. I think you can use the word large-scale massacres. My problem with the word genocide is that the killings are not against one specific ethnic groups or identity groups or political groups. Basically, those who suffer are all the Congolese civilians, all the armed groups commit huge human rights violations and killings, rapes, looting, torture, everything against Congolese civilian, virtually without any pretext. Most of the time, it's to punish them from having collaborated with the enemy, supposedly collaborated. The civilian populations don't collaborate with anyone. The town is taken by an armed group and then retaken by another one. So that most of the casualties during the war, the Second Congo War, were really civilian casualties, people who were caught in the front line, or people who had to flee to the bush to escape the fighting and then didn't have anything to survive in the bush and died there in the bush. And I think that's really that's the biggest risk now with the escalation of the crisis, is that you have so many people that are displaced, that have no access to healthcare, no access to food, absolutely no security, and their health and their life is very much jeopardized on a daily basis. And so we are likely, if the crisis escalates, and we still have a chance that it will not escalate if all the diplomatic involvement succeeds in de-escalating the crisis. But if the crisis does escalate, or even if it stays at the level where it is now, then there is a huge chance that thousands or hundreds of thousands more civilians will continue to die in the coming months in the Congo. Yeah. Huge risk.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time and your explanations of what's going on in that region and the world.
Thank you so much.
That's it for tonight's Late City Edition. If you'd like to read more about the Congo from Professor Séverine Autesserre, she had an article out in Foreign Affairs Magazine, the May-June edition, an article in that entitled Trouble with Congo. So if you'd like, you could get your hands on that. probably from the Foreign Affairs website, unless you have a time machine to go back in time. I'd like to thank the AFP. The clip you heard from Laurent Kundo is actually taken from YouTube.com using the AFP's feed on there. You could see that if you just search AFP TV on YouTube. Questions, comments, suggestions are always welcome. They can be sent to globalnewsroundup@gmail.com. Once again, that's globalnewsroundup@gmail.com. This has been Nishant Bhatia for WKCR 89.9 FM. Please stay tuned for Arts and Answers coming up next. Have a great night.